Hey, it's Lisa Carlin from Attacking Third to tell you about the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. It's equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend. The Hyundai Santa Fe features available all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, plus available dual wireless charging pads, ensuring that you can take on any adventure. It's ski season, and with the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, I can easily load the car with all my gear plus my friends in the third row and make it right to the base of the slopes with all-wheel drive. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hello and welcome to Attacking Third, a CBS Sports Soccer podcast. I'm Sandra Herrera, lead NWSL writer for CBS Sports, joined today as always by my colleague and co-host Lisa Roman, NWSL analyst and broadcaster. On today's episode, we have a news and notes segment for everyone to catch you all up on what's happening in NWSL offseason and around the world. A quick reminder before we get into everything, we're on YouTube as video. You can subscribe to us on youtube.com/attackingthird. You'll never miss a new episode or wherever we go live. You'll never miss our exclusive interviews and so much more. So please subscribe to us to Attacking Third YouTube. I love it. People can find all kinds of stuff on there, Lisa, including highlights, right?
Yes, we have Asian Women's Cup highlights on Attacking Third right now because I'm going to be honest with you, Sandra, with some of our listeners. Those 3 a.m. wake up times, they're not too happy. I don't love that so much for these game times. So I'm rewatching on Paramount Plus because they have them on demand, which is fantastic. I can throw them on during the day and watch them. And then I can catch all the highlights, so all the good plays, all the 18 goals from Australia. Watch all of that on Attacking Third YouTube because we have it all, frankly. We do.
I love it. I'm with you. It's been tough with those early calls. The 8 a.m. ones for me, Central Time, I haven't been too bad. You know, wake up, have a little breakfast, have a little soccer. That's been good. And it's been helpful because for us in Chicago, we've been kind of snowed in a little bit or frozen in now because we had some frigid temperatures. And it is definitely winter time for sure.
Oh, yeah. And now is when you start to see the different areas of the country and the different personnel, because like I am in Philadelphia and I'm freezing and we are having freezing temperatures, but it's like 28, 27. And you in Chicago, I mean, at 7 a.m. this morning, we were at like 16. But in Chicago, that's like your everyday. That's like your high of the day is like 16. So I feel like a wimp. But also, I lived in the Midwest for 4 years. Yeah. I was used to those frigid, snowy temperatures, and now I can't handle it.
It's so funny to go from like temperatures that are like negative degrees, and then like on a day where it's like 19 degrees, that's still very cold. But like after coming out of that, you're like, oh gosh, I'm sweating out here. This 20 degrees.
Where's my sunblock?
This 20 degree weather. It's so funny. Speaking of freezing, right? Let's just go into it. Maybe let's chat a little bit about what's going on with the NWSL and the players union and their ongoing negotiations for a collective bargaining agreement. Since late 2020 and really all of 2021, the NWSL Players Association has been fighting for a CBA, collective bargaining agreement, for its players. And as of now, in terms of the early framework for NWSL in 2022, players are supposed to report to their respective clubs for preseason on February 1st. And there are still actually supposed to be active negotiations between the two parties here to try and go ahead and confirm a CBA for the players, ahead of the season. Now, obviously, at the timing of this recording and when our listeners go ahead and listen to this, it's still the end of January, but there's not a lot of time left here. So in terms of the timeline or the deadline of things working out, not a lot of grace room to work with. You know, we had Megan Burke and Sidney Miramontes on the show not too long ago, and they kind of refer to this moment as stoppage time, mm-hmm. right, Lisa? And we kind of haven't had that breakthrough goal yet, just yet.
Yeah, I think stoppage time is a good way to put it, because these conversations have been happening for over a year, right? Like these conversations originally started way back in 2020. It was announced in April of 2021, a joint statement between the league and the Players Association saying that, hey, we are starting to have these conversations surrounding a CBA and bargaining and petitioning to protect the players from the PA's position. And the fact that it is now approaching February of 2022 and there are still matters that are being discussed and that are not settled. Now, right, like full disclosure, there are a lot of matters that have been settled within the CBA. Within this CBA, I mean, we broke it down when we had Megan Burke on and Sydney to talk about this, but there are so many different points that are being made in this negotiation. I think it's important to remind listeners that one of the points that was actually taken out of this CBA and brought to the table on its own was player protection and an anti-harassment policy in the NWSL. That was originally part of the CBA, but the Players Association realized that these players were in danger and their safety was being threatened. So they took that out of the CBA, put it on the table, and they came to those contract negotiations a lot quicker. Now, still in this CBA, there are so many different points that are being made. A lot of them have been proved and have been agreed upon, but there are still a few, quote, like sticking points between the two sides that they cannot agree on at this point. Things along the lines of free agency, if that's a possibility for the players, how long it'll be a possibility, roster updates for all of these changes, and then really how long this CBA is going to last, because we're in about to start the 10th season of the NWSL, and this is the first time there's a CBA. So how long does the CBA last? When do they get to go into negotiations again if there are different points either side wants to bring on? So I think that's kind of important umbrella to lay over all of this groundwork that we have.
No, absolutely. And you know, obviously, with that February 1st deadline for preseason, there's always, you know, that thought in the back of your mind, well, what does that mean for the players who are, you know, obviously feeling like they're not getting a lot of responses out of these negotiations? And it was recently reported earlier this week from Megalina Henry of The Athletic that actually NWSL players are considering, you know, not reporting to clubs without a CBA in place for them. So sources saying that they won't report to the first day of preseason without a collective bargaining agreement in place. So it would be what is the first sort of CBA related work stoppage, you know, since these negotiations have been, you know, ongoing over the last course of the year. And when we're looking at and thinking about the players union and sort of how far they've come, right, their evolution, right, in terms of, you know, their very early days of, you know, their early foundation, this would really kind of be the very historical for them in terms of, you know, following through with something like this. And I don't think that it's something that should be looked at or taken lightly, right? And when it comes to things like leverage or showing that your side is taking this very seriously, if one side thinks the other side is not taking it serious, that's the leverage, right? The leverage is to ultimately hold out. And in terms of the calendar ahead, it's the very first demonstration could be on February 1st. That's like the first earliest type of action they could take, because all this time from off season being from November through to January, it's just been like a typical off season where there's just sort of been business as usual for clubs in terms of participating in what we knew as you know, the expansion draft for the two new clubs, and then an NWSL draft, and then, you know, oh, trade windows and acquisitions and signings and things like that. All of this still ongoing as if it's still just a regular off season. And then in terms of having a thing to point to and say, this is something that we can utilize collectively to show solidarity and demonstrate together, it's this February 1 deadline.
I think that's so important to talk about, is the leverage that the players and the PA have right now, because as you mentioned, it's been off season and the players haven't had any responsibilities or duties so far. And this is the first time where they can say, oh, we are not going to show up to work if we don't have protection and a CBA in place. I know that this conversation has been so ongoing for so long, over 35 bargaining sessions between the league and the Players Association and the owners. And that's really, it's a conversation between two that really expands into a conversation between three, between the players, the clubs, and the league, because everyone really needs to agree on these terms, but it's mainly the Players Association and then the league. And because of that, what is the league going to do if the players don't show up on February 1st, right? That's the only leverage that the players have right now. And it's important to note that the players want to do their job. They want to play soccer. They want to be reunited with their clubs. They want to be reunited with their friends and their teammates. It's like Christmas morning for a player when you get to go to preseason. You're nervous. You've got the butterflies. You get to see your friends. You're excited. But if this is what they can use to make sure that they are protected and that they have rules in place heading into the 10th year of this league, I think it's really important that these players continue to have their voice and do that, which we have seen, if anything, throughout 2021, the players finding their voice and using it really, really loudly. And I hate unturning these stones and continuing to have these conversations, but throughout the course of the 2021 season, there was really league-wide fallout surrounding the systemic abuse accusations and investigations that started with them, and then the revelations of all of this systemic abuse that changed these CBA negotiations. And that's a fact. It did change how these negotiations have happened and how the conversations have happened, not only in the NWSL PA and the NWSL League, but also on the bigger stage of the U.S. Women's National Team Players Association and those conversations with U.S. soccer. Because of everything that happened and the fallout of 2021, those conversations changed. But the players' course of action has not, and that is that they need protection and they want a CBA heading into this next season. And now, as they put a deadline on it a long time ago by February 1st, and nothing happened. We've seen a lot of deadlines throughout this last calendar year for the NWSL. And a lot of times they were met, but a lot of times they weren't. And we would hear things as the public media a few days after the deadlines. And it was like, okay, so this deadline was fake. It was like an empty threat. And the Players Association at this point in time, at the end of January, is saying, we gave you a deadline of February 1st. And if you don't abide by that deadline, we will not show up to preseason. And they put out a statement seven days before on Twitter saying that and really reiterating their stance on this, and that their end goal is to come to a deal and come to an agreement with the league.
Yeah, I think taking that step, that proactive step to sort of put it out in a public place, which in this case is via statements along their appropriate social media channels, sort of is the green light, I think, in that there is an agreement, right, amongst the players, amongst the players' unions, that in terms of actionable demonstrations, that this is something that they're taking very seriously. It's obviously not a conclusion that they've come to lightly. And I'll just read this statement that they've been putting out on Twitter and then their releases. Since March 2021, we have negotiated in good faith with the NWSL to secure the first CBA in a U.S. professional Women's Soccer League. We are now 7 days from the start of Season 10 with no contract in place. The NWSL and the Board of Governors have our final proposals and can vote to agree to a contract that values and protects us as players and moves the league in the direction we all know it deserves to go. It is time, NWSL. Hashtag contract now. So, you know, as of this recording and that statement being put out on the 25th, where they timed it with exactly 1 week to go, it's got a ton of, you know, interactions, engagement, retweets, over 1,000. I can imagine that the impressions, right, and the social media that this is making. So it is something that has been out there, right? And this is, I think, is close to a statement, you know, in terms of a definitive thing that people can point to and say the union is, you know, effectively putting the ball right in their court, and they have their plans in place should this deadline come up and nothing is occurring.
So as of right now, Sandra, we have the Players Association statement that comes out 1 week before the start of preseason saying, we need this deal, we need a CBA, or we are not going to show up. As we get even closer to February 1st, every minute and every second we talk on this podcast, we're getting closer. What is really like the best case scenario that is practical over these next few days? Because can they come to an agreement? Can the league come to a deal before February 1st? Could it happen towards the end of the first week of February? What's our best case scenario here that fans and the players are hoping for?
Well, I think, like, you know, glass half full, right? Optimism is that if there's a deadline, that's fine. That means that there's still time, right? And that anything can happen, kind of, you know, and hopefully with everything that's been going on in the league, and we'll actually get into this on this episode. You know, the league has been dealing with some things into the off season that stemmed in 2021, whether that was ongoing investigations, you know, surrounding all of the, you know, reporting that came out in 2021, talking about, you know, toxic environments, abuse from coaches, and tied up with investigations there, or the ongoing negotiations with the CBA on top of dealing with some things out of Washington Spirit and shifts in ownership, changes going on there. So there were things, right, that the Board of Governors sort of had on their plates stemming from 2021 into this off season. And we've heard adjacent to this statement now from the Players Union that there hasn't been a ton of negotiating going on in this offseason in terms of two parties here coming together on some type, let's just assume a virtual table, right? Because we're operating in a pandemic, coming to a virtual table and having these negotiating and bargaining sessions, that it's been very slim on the league side of things versus the player side of things. And so with some current updates with, you know, something like the Spirit saga going on, and again, we'll get into that, that maybe now with some days remaining, a handful of days remaining or so in the month of January, that the Board of Governors can perhaps take a look at these proposals finally, with the, you know, that are coming directly from the players, and try to get back to that negotiating table and try to bargain and hash out an actual CBA, that would be the first of its kind, you know, ahead of the 2022 season, ahead of these players, you know, having to report to preseason camps. I think that's the best case scenario, and that you're being as optimistic as possible and saying, hey, there's still a handful of days here. Let's, you know, you've given us your proposal here. We're taking a look at it. We agree with A, B, and C, maybe not X, Y, and Z. And let's try to work this out and figure it out. But both groups absolutely have to be in numbers, right? We'll just say in numbers at those negotiating tables in order to have that happen. You know, and then of course there's everything that could possibly happen if it doesn't get agreed on.
I mean, yes, and we'll get into that. But when you speak of the numbers and everything that's happening, I think, I mean, from my perspective, the NWSLPA has the upper hand right now, because they realize that if they put out a statement, and right, this was thought out, this was very well done on their behalf to put out a statement on Twitter exactly 1 week before they're supposed to report, to kind of make the time crunch that they are under, the players are under, the league is under, very public, and let fans be known of it. That way, if and when February 1 comes around and the players do not report, it's not this giant bombshell of fans scrambling to catch up and say, what's happening? Why aren't the players here? Season ticket holders, what's happening? Is the season not starting? The PA put it out there and said, listen, this is where we stand. We need answers. We need a deal. We want to play, but we can't play if we don't have this deal. So looking at that and the season, right, like preseason is around the corner, supposed to be, then the season starts. It's a 6-week preseason, and then the Challenge Cup's supposed to be starting March 19th, running through the first week of May going into that. Like, will the schedule get pushed back? Will preseason be shortened, right? Like, the players want to play. This is their job. It's what they want to do. So like, what happens if the players don't go to preseason? Will the preseason be extended? Will it just be pushed back? Will the timetables be moved? I mean, there's a lot of moving factors in all of this, and there's still no schedule out yet from the league. That's another factor into this. So the schedule could change, and we might not even know about it.
Yeah, there's all of that that's happening in the background of this, where you're trying to make a schedule while there's no CBA in place. And the players have obviously expressed like, hey, we're not going to report if this isn't in place. So, I mean, there's all those things, right? There's both pros and cons, right, in all this. And I'm sure the players union has weighed those things. And it's something like a potential holdout, right? You're talking about a 6-week period starting February 1, and what happens if that sort of rolls into or bleeds into what would be the proposed Challenge Cup, which according to framework that the league put out initially would start, you know, in mid-March, March 19th, and then go into May 7th, like you mentioned, Lisa, and like within this sort of knowing that these events are, you know, tied to other things, tied to, you know, being broadcast on certain areas. I mean, I believe the final, please correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the final is scheduled to be on network CBS. Yeah. So there is expecting a championship to be played on that. And what we've been seeing during this time, when there is opportunity for these NWSL games to be on that type of channel, we're seeing outrageous numbers, like outrageous viewership, right, that comes in when the league airs on CBS. And it is huge for the league. It's huge for the players, the clubs that participate in it. So there's all these things that come into play, right? So on the one hand, it's like you have, you know, what's the league going to do if the players don't report to, you know, February 1? And are you still going to utilize these 6 weeks to try to negotiate something in place? And if that does bleed into something like a Challenge Cup, then the league also has to answer to, you know, broadcast partners, you know. So this, could it get messy? Absolutely. It could absolutely get messier for the league. There's no ifs or buts about it. But I think the goal is for things to not get to that worst case scenario.
Of course. And that's why the players are saying, okay, we'll cut our preseason short, right? Because it's such a trickle down effect. I mean, from every single level of this, the players not reporting payments, like players getting paid, season ticket holders, broadcast rights holders, league schedules getting changed. Like, there are just so many factors that go into this professional soccer season that could be changed just based upon this CBA deal. And I think that's the point that the Players Association is trying to make, that they have all the power to put on a player strike based specifically on this CBA and not coming to an agreement with the league.
It's been, I guess before we take a break, I'll just say that it's been it's really been an honor and a privilege to sort of cover this, right, as it's been unfolding. Mm-hmm. And again, witnessing the growth that this player union has had since their initial foundation to now, and just sort of seeing them find their collective voices and understand and recognize the strength and what would be collective action. It's something that we're going to keep an eye on for sure and continue to try and report on as best we can. And hopefully the next time we do talk about this, there will be a CBA in place. But for now, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come on back, we will chat a little bit about Washington Spirit and the update on the ownership saga going on there. Be right back.
Finding the right cleat can be transformative. Believe me, I've worn plenty during my career. So getting the right balance is crucial. The cleat needs to feel good on your foot, but also feel good connecting with the ball. The New Balance Furon 7 Plus is built with both of those points in mind, offering overall comfort and precise striking in the game's fastest moments. Because, as I learned the hard way, because I didn't possess much of it, speed matters in soccer. That's why the Furon 7 Plus is built for accuracy and precision at rapid pace and is engineered specifically for use on firm ground. Why is this the ideal cleat, I hear you ask? Well, not to get too scientific, but the Furon 7 Plus offers a lightweight yet supportive hypo-knit with mesh lining upper construction and is paired with offset lacing for a truer strike of the ball, which is a long way of me saying that your game will immediately get better when these are on your feet. Learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Washington Spirit. It's like the news and the updates around Washington Spirit, it almost feels like it will never leave us. We got to update our listeners on some more things that are going on the Spirit side of things. Recently, the NWSL board approved unanimously Michelle King's attempt to go ahead and vet and obtain voting control of the Washington Spirit via vetting the other minority owners and obtaining a larger amount of shares in terms of voting control. And this was a little bit chaotic. We did an episode about it and reacted to it and talked a little bit about the news for that. And because of the way that this was done, it got the NWSL Board of Governors involved in that, which before, Lisa, I think it sort of looked like they were just trying to make sure that Baldwin and the franchise sort of took care of it on its own. But with the minority investors sort of showing that they are placing their trust in Michael King, it's sort of force the issue, right? Kind of force the hand. And the NWSL Board of Governors had to have a meeting with Y. Michelle King and Steve Baldwin and sort of hear these sort of pitches from each respective party to talk about this process that occurred and why it was fair or why it was unfair, why it was valid or why it was invalid. And it turns out that after the arguments were made, the NWSL board unanimously approved of the methodology, but were adamant in saying that just because that happened, that still means that the Washington Soccer Properties LLC needs to complete the transaction. And there has to be a vote that takes place before like official recognition of ownership for majority ownership for why Michelle King can actually take place. And I think that's an important angle to maybe sort of settle in a little bit here. Because ultimately, when that release came out, there was some reaction to it where it's like, so the Board of Governors unanimously, validated, right, the debt holder, the equity, the debt to equity conversation, right? But why don't they just make it official? Why don't they? Well, it's because the NWSL is also a business. It's also an LLC, and Washington Soccer Properties is also an LLC, and one LLC can't force another LLC to do certain type of business. It's all a lot of legalese that's involved in it. But what this essentially does is it flags and it signals that, hey, if the Washington Soccer Properties LLC eventually goes through the official processes to vote and declare and make Y. Michelle King the majority owner, that the NWSL Board of Governors will take it that final step and go ahead and approve that and recognize that officially themselves. So that is the next process of this in terms of Washington Spirit. So it's almost like there's a lot of folks out there who are, have been pushing for something like this and wanting to see this come to life and sort of seeing this recent news. It's almost like people were like, oh, is it official? Oh, wait a minute. It's not. Let me take a step back. So it's one of these things where it's like why Michelle King is just taking another step forward, right, to possibly obtaining that final piece of becoming majority owner of the Washington Spirit.
Yes, I think that's important to note because it is a lot of, I'm going to say, legal hoops to jump through and that you and I have been trying to stay updated on, right? Like with the whole debt equity exchange, like I was Googling every other word because I'm not a business owner of giant corporations, of entire franchises. So to kind of wrap my head around all of this is a little bit difficult because it's like, okay, you approved of Y. Michelle King and her ability to kind of convince, I'm going to say, minority owners to give her controlling stake of the team. But now it comes back that it's still kind of in the hands of Steve Baldwin and Y. Michelle King because the team still has not been sold entirely. And that's kind of like the finish line of this saga, right? That the team gets sold. And to the fans and the players of the Washington Spirit, they want that sale to happen to Y. Michelle King so that she becomes a majority owner and that she can sit on the Board of Governors in the NWSL and be at that table and make those decisions. And it really comes full circle back to the CBA discussion because the CBA negotiations are happening between the Players Association, the NWSL as a league, and then the Board of Governors, which is the owners that own all of these franchises that come back to this. So it's having the people in the right position of ownership and power to make informed and qualified decisions to do right by the players and do right by the league ultimately. And it comes down to this. So although like these two stories may seem separate between the CBA negotiations and the players potentially going on strike and the Washington Spirit ownership saga that has been happening for months and months and months, they are so intertwined and connected at the bottom of it. And because they both involve the league and the NWSL board overall, it makes things even more tangled because it's not just like they're having one conversation to focus on. They really have to look at both sides and all sides of each different situation, which then makes it even longer. It's such a process. But good news is that there continue to be developments within the Washington Spirit ownership discussion that is happening. And one of the latest being this conversation between Y. Michelle Kang, Steve Baldwin, presenting their own sides of the argument and their sides of this situation to the board. And then the NWSL board ultimately voting on it. But that's not all, Sandra. This story continues.
Somebody cue up the closing credits music. I don't know. It's almost like almost like a horror movie, right? Where you think like the villain is dead, but then it like comes back to life for that one last kind of scare. I'm not trying to minimize it by any means. It's just really like from the outside perspective of this looking in, that's just kind of what it feels like sometimes. And I mean, even with the NWSL Board of Governors sort of unanimous decision on this in terms of just sort of recognizing the process, now that things are back, you know, into Washington soccer properties, now it's like a little bit of some more final attempts to try to like gain one control over things within the franchise. And it was reported by Sportico on January 26th that Steve Baldwin sent an email to the team investors accusing co-owner Y. Michelle Kang of all the aforementioned things that he has already accused her of in terms of all the interfighting. The word lies and liar was thrown around there several times. I mean, this has been a months long battle for control over the Washington Spirit. And it's just sort of this email that kind of got released, just sort of read like, just almost sort of like a final attempt, right, to kind of discredit. At one point, there is literally a moment within this very long email that sort of lays out all of these different grievances against Kang about no longer wanting to remain silent on things. Baldwin actually writes at one point within this saying that I've made every attempt to take the high road throughout this ordeal, other than now highlighting a very, very small set of facts of what Bill Lynch, Spirit co-owner, and I dealt with from our, quote, business partner. I have not pestered you. I haven't waged a public campaign. I haven't spoken to media, and I haven't leaked any of the interactions of this group or anything else. Time has come where I can no longer remain silent. It's just it's a lot. It's long and it's lengthy. I think the biggest thing for me that ended up standing out within this is at one point, Baldwin refers to former ousted head coach Richie Burke at one point. You know, this is the same head coach that they brought in who was later investigated for creating a toxic environment, for hurling abusive language at players. And Baldwin refers to him as someone who could possibly be credible in terms of defaming Y. Michelle Kang, that Burke is someone who could allude to the fact that, she promised him additional compensation if he coerced cooperation in ousting Baldwin from the club and to keep their meetings a secret. Just a lot of in this email just sort of coming to light and how Baldwin very clearly views Y. Michelle Kang and the process at this point. And it's just really sad. I think that it's sort of coming to the final act here, that this is sort of what's coming out. And obviously there's lawyers involved at this point and legal things involved, and in terms of the leak of this actual email, there's also legal representation for Kang, who are speaking out on her behalf. So it's just one of these things where it's like, I think all knew that this was going to get quite messy before it actually got cleaned up, unfortunately.
Sandra, you mentioned a number of times the length of this email, 1,500 words. to written by Steve Baldwin, presumably written by him. Maybe his attorney gave it a glance over before he hit send. But as you mentioned, yeah, attorneys involved, because of course, as journalists, The Athletic and Sporting Co. have to reach out to Kang and say, do you have a response to this? And of course she says no. Her attorney responds for her. She's a smart businesswoman, basically Kang with no comment, but the attorney saying, quote, we are disappointed to learn that Mr. Baldwin continues to repeat these false and inappropriate allegations with the best interests of the team in mind and the vote by the NWSL Board of Governors last weekend. We are ready to move forward and focus on the next exciting chapter for the Washington Spirit and women's professional soccer. So it's interesting when I read this and when I kind of absorb this information, Baldwin seems to still be trying to throw stones at Kang and accuse her of bad things, whether that's socializing inappropriately with players and becoming too friendly with them, which is one of the points he makes in this letter, that he doesn't think it's appropriate that she has such a friendly relationship with the players, and trying to just accuse her of all of these different things, right? Going into secret coercion deals with then head coach Richie Burke. And at this point, Kang is like, okay, what about the players? What about the team? What about the club? We have to look at the future of this club. We just won the NWSL championship. How do we make this club even better? How do we continue to move forward from this and kind of continue to move on? So it's just so weird, right? Like how all of this is coming out and the continuation of this conversation. Baldwin also saying that Kang doesn't like fund the club and that it is solely Steve Baldwin funding the franchise at this point, but he's majority owner of the club. It's very interesting.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's just a lot of happening. And for him to kind of say, I've taken the high road for so long and now I'm going to write this email and I'm going to ask the board a lot of questions of their integrity and of Kang's integrity and try to accuse her of all of these different accusations throughout the season and even throwing Richie Burke into the mix of all of this, who is not credible at all, right? Like fully under investigation, fully removed from his post, just not a credible source. It's a lot. It's a lot that continues to happen. And unfortunately, the players are involved in this kind of debate because these are their owners of their club.
Yeah, it's, oh man, talking about February 1 deadlines, right? This is probably another one that we've got to keep an eye on in terms of things that need to be wrapped up by a certain time for sure. That's lengthy. 1,500 words to sort of make a last-ditch attempt, I think, to sort of ensure that you still have control of a team. And quite frankly, it disregards the players. I think even with anyone's best intentions of mind and trying to speak out or feel like they no longer want to be silenced, to use Baldwin's words, I think it disregards the players and their intentions as well. I mean, this is a team and a club of the roster that felt motivated to release a statement of their own, and players put their names on it and their words on it and said that the person that they no longer trust to run the team is Baldwin and the person that they trust is Kang. So it's I think it's something that we'll have to look back on and take a look at all the different pieces, you know, when it's all sort of said, done and dusted. But we're not quite there yet. So this is just another thing that we'll be keeping an eye on moving forward along with the ongoing NWSL CBA negotiations. Before we wrap up, we want to take the time to remind everyone that Paramount Plus is where you can catch the AFC Asian Women's Cup. All the matches are on Paramount Plus. If you miss a game for whatever reason, you can catch full highlights over on Attacking Third YouTube, youtube.com/Attacking Third, or you can catch full matches on demand on Paramount Plus. Really quickly, we got to give give an update, though. Group play is officially over in the Asian Women's Cup. And I got to say, it's been a delight to sort of take in some of these games and take a look at everything. We do have to give an update, I think, before making a note that the quarterfinals will be taking place. Group A had to get shuffled around a little bit. Basically, what ended up happening was that the hosts, India, sort of had to withdraw. Not sort of. They did have to withdraw. A withdrawal was placed on them based on rules of the competition surrounding COVID-19 right ahead of match day 2 when the team was scheduled to play Chinese Taipei. There was a string of positive cases of COVID-19 impacting the team, and coupled with some injuries, and the team was unfortunately unable to name a 13-player game day roster, which was the absolute minimum, like bare minimum, to name 13 players for a match day. And because of their failure to do so, again, coupled with the string of positive cases and injury, the competition, the AFC, declared this was something where they could not move forward and progress into the tournament, obviously based on the type of tournament that it was and the timeline that is in play for the competition. So because of that, Group A teams sort of functioned as just as a three-team group with China, Iran, and Chinese Taipei. With the two matches in hand, China was the first team to clinch a quarterfinal spot. But now in terms of the other groups, Group B and Group C, and how things shook out there, it's going to be China, Japan, Australia, South Korea, Philippines, Thailand, Vietnam, and Chinese Taipei that are going to round out the quarterfinals. Unfortunately, India, Myanmar, Indonesia, and Iran are out after the group stages. Their journey to the World Cup sort of ends with the group stage in Asian Women's Cup. And for the quarterfinals, there's some big ones that are going to be coming up. So, again, you can watch all of these on Paramount Plus. They're going to all be taking place on January 30th. So we got a big one in Japan versus Thailand on Sunday, January 30th at 3 a.m. Eastern time. Probably the biggest one for me that I've got circled on here is Australia versus South Korea taking place also at 3 a.m. Eastern time. China versus Vietnam at 7 a.m. Eastern Central Time. And Chinese Taipei versus Philippines at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. You can watch all of these games on Paramount Plus. Again, you could catch full extended highlights on Attacking Third YouTube page. Lisa, before we close out, I got to say I'm very happy for you and Vietnam, the pick that you had to advance out of the group stages. Way to go.
Me too. Vietnam was almost like my underdog. And as I know you mentioned it at the top of this Asian Women's Cup conversation, but the fact that India is disqualified is actually really sad because, right, like we had so many high hopes going into them when we had Steph Yang on to talk about the Asian Women's Cup and everything. We had a lot of high hopes for India. But yes, my Vietnam team is going strong. Yeah. I wanted them to get out of the group round because I think they have something a little special. But for me, looking at these quarterfinal matches, it's Australia, South Korea, Sunday at 3 a.m. I will not be watching it at 3 a.m. I'll probably rewatch it around like 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. I'm just going to sleep a little bit longer because, Sandra, you know this. Once the NWSL season gets started and I'm back to traveling every weekend and calling games, I got to get my sleep where I can. And I still want to watch Sam Kerr. Want to see if she breaks any more records. She became Australia's all-time international goal scorer last week in these matches. She scored a total of 54 goals throughout her career and counting. So that continues to go. So see if she continues to climb and break records. But all of these games I'm tuning in for. I mean, Vietnam, they're my dark horse heading into this one. Philippines, I got a personal connection there. Riley Bugay, she plays for them. She's my friend, my former teammate at Marquette. And then Australia, South Korea, it's a big one I've circled. And then Japan, Thailand, like, right? These are good games. Yeah. We'll see what happens, all again taking place on Sunday at various times. So rewatch them on Paramount Plus, watch them live, and you can always catch the extended highlights on youtube.com/attackingthird. We have them for you all.
Yeah, I'm hyped for them. There are going to be some good games, and there are 5 World Cup spots in place coming out of this tournament. So now that we're into the knockout rounds, these 5 spots are like absolutely like within grasp, and this is where the games this is where the games kind of really start to take a different, maybe a different type of tempo, in terms of you know, in terms of making it to the World Cup. And I think if people have their, you know, matches kind of cross on ones that they want to take a look, I think they're absolutely zeroing in on Australia and South Korea. I'm going to be excited to maybe take a look at Chinese Taipei and Philippines. I think it's been really fun to sort of see this Philippines team kind of continue their growth, right, in their evolution, just narrowly missing out on the previous World Cup in 2019 into now sort of maybe looking like they're in a little bit of a better position for this upcoming World Cup. So we'll be taking a look at that, and we'll probably go ahead and recap the quarterfinals for everyone next week when we return. I want to thank everybody for listening. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Attacking Third. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and anywhere you listen to your podcast shows. You can leave us a 5-star review on Spotify now. And if you have any questions for us, you can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with a question, and Lisa and I will answer it during our mailbag segment. We're also available as videos. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Visit youtube.com/attackingthird. And we'll be back on Monday with more coverage and exclusive interviews for Sandra Herrera and Lisa Roman. This was Attacking Third.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.